Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix with Rod Bryant and Jerry Gordon here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the Matrix.
And you have moved beyond the Matrix. I'm Rod Bryant. Really, we appreciate you taking time to listen to the show. Give us your comments. And those who are watching on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe. And also, if you're listening to us on Israel News Talk Radio website, make sure that you share, like the page and share it. Jerry, we have a very familiar guest and a familiar voice on the show today by the name of Dan Diker. I want to do a brief introduction of who Dan is and why we're going to have him on today.
Well, Dan is the director of the program to counter political warfare at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. Prior to that, he was the secretary general of the World Jewish Congress. He's most associated with efforts by the JCPA and others to normalize relationships between Israelis, Palestinians, Israeli Arabs, and frankly, in the wider context, dealing most importantly with the appropriate backing of the Trump peace plan, which we now see getting support from the Saudis, the Emirates, and ironically, behind the scenes, the Jordanians and the Egyptians. They don't want to deal with the Palestinians.
They're fed up with them. And we're going to find out also that many of the Arabs living in the Israeli area, they don't want to be under Palestinian control. It's a really important thing. So what we're going to focus on is the fact that the Trump administration, along with Netanyahu, has served a ball of truth over the net to the Palestinian Authority, and they've been served. It's their time to answer whether they're going to do it. Now, we know that Abbas has already wholesale rejected the whole thing, but he's done that, what, 9 or 10 times? 10 times. This is the 10th one.
10 times.
Right? Yeah.
That's right.
So this is the 10th time that they've been served over a deal. As a matter of fact, they have given them the kitchen sink and they're still refusing it. And I really do believe that this could be an opportunity for things to get turned around if the Arabs living in these areas, in the Jewish areas, could actually bow up and sort of overtake their government in some way. So don't go away. You listen to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hey, I'm Jono Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
New shows are posted every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time, highlighting the lighter side and advancing a positive view of Israel here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We are back. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rod Bryant along with Jerry Gordon. Of course, Dan Diker has been with us several times in the past. And today we want to really nail down the controversy. I don't know if it was a controversy, Dan, but misconceptions about the peace deal and that it is not about annexation. Let's go right off of the bat and explain to the listener, who are going to be listening to us from all over the world, why is it being presented in the media as only about annexation, and they've completely ignored all the other things that are about the peace plan?
Well, Rod, I think that you said it very right in your introduction. This is not about annexation. That's a fake term. It's about a peace deal. It's the first time in many years, if since the very beginning in 1993, the month was September, Bill Clinton was the president of the United States at that time, and the United States started sanctioning what was known as the Oslo Accords. 1993 was the first of them, 1995 was the second of them, but what the United States had never had not done since then is to really do its security homework in order to help Israel make the type of security-based concessions that would actually lead to a viable Palestinian sovereign entity, but also a viable Israel. And that's ultimately why all of these past nine attempts have ultimately failed, because the Palestinians, represented by the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, and their service room called the Palestinian Authority, were unprepared to recognize Israel's ironclad security requirements to survive in this Middle East, which since 1993 has devolved and actually almost self-destructed in terms of a stable state system, as we've seen from 2011. So the international media has helped everybody get this wrong. They're all focusing on annexation. It's not about annexation. Israel, with the United States support, has declared an intention to possibly and maybe probably apply Israeli civilian law to Israeli Jewish communities east of the 1967 lines. That is not an abrogation of international law. That's merely a stage in the application of civilian law as opposed to military law. We had military law until now, Rod and Jerry, and now we want to move to normalization of life in Judea, Samaria, the West Bank, for Israelis and most probably for Palestinians in those areas. And that is why we're talking about the application of Israeli law. It's not sovereignty yet. It is not annexation, because annexation refers to land that is not yours. And this is not the case in Judea and Samaria.
Sometime during this interview, I would like to ask, how is this going to impact the Palestinians that live, the Arabs that live in Judea and Samaria? Wouldn't this be a financial boost and security boost for themselves?
Rod, Jerry, let's be very clear about what we're talking about here. We're talking about the possibility of applying Israeli civilian law to the Jordan Rift Valley, to Jewish communities throughout Area C of the West Bank, in Jewish communities, and in addition to the whole of the Jordan Rift Valley. Now, there are some 5,500 Israelis there and very, very few Arab residents of those areas. And the Arab residents of those areas have all, if you look at their average GDP per capita, it's much, much higher than the same for Palestinians living under the Palestinian Authority or Arabs living anywhere else in the Middle East. In terms of their political rights, that is still an open question, but there's definitely the option on the table and the principle being discussed that the Arabs living, the few thousand Arabs living in the Jordan Valley, other than in the enclave of Jericho, which is under the Palestinian Authority, they would be accorded the rights that Israelis would be accorded under civilian law. All we're doing here is moving away from military administration and normalizing life under Israeli civilian law, which is completely consonant with international law. And remember, it's not sovereignty, it's not annexation, merely the application of civilian law in those areas.
Dan, colleague Abu Khalid Tomei just published an article dealing with the problem about the PA rejecting those Oslo II agreements structured in 1995. Why don't you explain to our listeners what the significance was of Mahmoud Abbas's actions and why the Israeli government has been so complicit in allowing them?
Well, you know, Mahmoud Abbas May the 19th declared in a cabinet meeting in Ramallah that he would cease all cooperation, including security cooperation with the state of Israel and cut off, you know, he had previously cut off all contacts at a senior level anyway with the United States administration. So his actions, as Khaled Abu Tuame and I wrote in a brief called Mahmoud Abbas's Strategy of Selective Compliance, which your listeners can read at jcpa.org. It's on the homepage. We'll give you a very bottom line assessment of the violation that Mahmoud Abbas continues to undertake, even while he's accusing Israel of violations. It's not the case. The case is that his unilateral cessation of security cooperation with Israel is a fundamental and material breach of his obligations under Oslo. Now, those material breaches, as you pointed out in the introduction, Jerry, started 27 years ago, just after Mr. Arafat, at that time chairman of the PLO, had signed with Israel. You know, Mr. Arafat was known to be hiding the mastermind of the Ma'alot child massacre in his trunk on the way back to Gaza in the initial stages of the Oslo Accords. And those violations of political violence, of support for terror, funding terror, and incitement to terror have simply continued on and on as a strategy of the Palestinian leadership. And the strategy apparently continues to work, because as Rod and I were talking about just a few minutes ago, you know, when Mahmoud Abbas says, Wolf, we're going to stop all of our critical security cooperation with Israel, the entire international community says, what did Israel do wrong in order to cause this fundamental Palestinian violation of Oslo? Now, Israel has made mistakes in not calling out its peace partner over the last almost three decades, and Israel's now paying the price for that because people have gotten used to siding with the Palestinian Authority, even though their very declaration on May 19th for the international community to recognize the state of Palestine as a full member state of the General Assembly of the United Nations is by itself a fundamental breach of the Oslo Accord.
That is a really interesting. Go ahead, Jerry.
Dan, why are the leaders of the settler councils in Judea, Samaria, and the Jordan Valley opposing the Trump peace plan?
Well, Jerry, there is an ongoing debate within the communities and the leaderships of the communities east of the 1967 lines that some, in a derogatory way, call the settlers. You know, the settlers has almost come to be known as the N-word for white racists regarding African-American people. I mean, it's that denigrative of who these fine people are. I happen to be a settler myself, being just outside Jerusalem in Efrat, and I guess they call me a deplorable, but I'm a proud deplorable. And what has happened is there is a debate among the settler community. I would say the more moderate diplomatic view, to which I subscribe, by the way, is that the U.S. peace plan is an important staged developed diplomatic process for Israel to enter into, because it recognizes Israel's historic and legal rights to Judea and Samaria. The other side of the debate, which is led by the Samaria local council leader Yossi Dagan, who's a great man and he's been a very good leader. I disagree with him in his black and white assessment of the U.S. plan and his opposition to the plan, in which he believes that the plan will lead to the destruction of Israel because it will give the PLO and the Hamas and other terror supporting organizations a deep, you know, sovereign foothold in the heart of Israel. I believe that for those people who have read the 181-page U.S. Vision for Peace, the Palestinians will have to demilitarize. That includes demilitarizing and disarming the Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad in Gaza. That means that they will have to allow Israel to have a security footprint in the upcoming Palestinian state. They'll have to stop funding terror, inciting to terror. There are so many prerequisites that the Palestinians will have to adhere to that it seems like there'll be very little chance that they will step up to the plate and agree.
When we come back, Dan, I want to pick up this sort of main line of thinking. A lot of people don't realize that the issue is very sensitive for the people that live there. It's also very sensitive for the Arabs that live there, because I'm not sure that they want to be under Arab control. I mean, under Palestinian control. It's something we can pick up in a little bit. Guys, don't go away. We're going to a break. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. Just want to remind you, you can watch us on YouTube at Nativ, N-E-T-I-V, online, and watch the whole show, even the behind-the-scenes stuff. So don't go away. We'll be back right after these messages.
Hi everyone, this is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On the Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Quick reminder to those who have not availed themselves, you can watch the Beyond the Matrix show on YouTube. Actually, you get to see what goes on in the breaks and the behind the scenes, so don't want to miss this. Go to Nativ, N-E-T-I-V, online, and you can watch us there on the internet. Before we went to the break, Dan, I just mentioned that most people don't understand that this affects also not only the Jewish people that are living in those regions. Notice I didn't say settlers, but also it has a very positive effect, I would think, on the Arabs, because those who are living in that region would not want to be under PA rule, correct?
Yes, that's a correct observation. In fact, at the end of the issue brief that Khaled Abu Toame and I, a friend, a colleague, and a very prominent Israeli Arab analyst for the Jerusalem Post, we wrote in this brief that according to the latest Palestinian polls, more than 60% of the Palestinian public is dissatisfied with Mahmoud Abbas's rule, which has gone on. You should know, I mean, everyone's talking about, you know, the democracy in the Palestinian state. He is now in the, he was elected in 2005. Today is 2020. So that would be what, the 5-year term. And he doesn't want to have elections because he's concerned that the Hamas will win, not only in Gaza, but in the West Bank. So the public is calling, more than 60% are calling for his removal and for elections and a replacement. So there is a lot of displeasure among the Palestinian public because economically they're not doing well. They're not doing well in terms of corruption. They see the Palestinian Authority as really the root of this poisonous corruption that affects them at the end of the day. There's no trickle down effect, and at the same time, as we've discussed on this program on Beyond the Matrix, there are some 30,000 to 35,000 Palestinian wage earners, men and women, who are earning 3.5 times. In Area C, industrial commercial zones that are owned by Israeli Jews and Israeli Arabs, than these Palestinians can earn in the Palestinian Authority-controlled areas. So they see the benefit of personal security in areas that are controlled and protected by the Israeli army and the Israeli civilian structure, and they also see the economic future. So this is something that really annoys the Palestinian leadership, because they've been failing at this egregiously since 1996, and that's why Mahmoud Abbas keeps assaulting Israel because he wants to distract the from this domestic lack of this domestic concern and discontent towards Palestinian Authority rule.
And there was an extraordinary report just a few days ago in Israel Hayom, indicating that behind the scenes, the royal families in both Saudi Arabia and in Jordan really back the so-called Trump peace plan. Why is that?
You know, Jerry, it's a very important question you asked, and one the question you asked is really a question about regional context. And when we have these discussions about Israel and the Palestinians, we very frequently, if not always, avoid or miss the regional context. The regional context here is that the Palestinian Authority has never been as isolated in between itself and its Arab brothers and sisters in the Arab League as it is today. And in fact, Israel Hayom, one of Israel's leading newspapers, the Arab Affairs Reporter, reported that senior members of the Saudi royal family, which he didn't name for obvious reasons, as well as in the Gulf states, speaking about the Arab Emirates, as well as the government in Jordan and Egypt, are giving a sort of quiet green light to Israel in order to carry out this intermediary step of applying Israeli law. And the answer that was given as to why they're giving a quiet green light is called the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Iranian regime's move for regional terror supremacy across the Middle East, which, as you folks know, they basically completely occupied Syria. They've occupied Lebanon. They're in Somalia. They're in Sudan. They're all over. They're in Gaza. They're all over the Middle East, and they're, you know, frankly threatening the Saudis, their neighbors, and basically the Arab leadership is saying, we are not prepared to sacrifice our vital strategic national interests in the Arab world for the Palestinians anymore. They've blown opportunities in the past, and now we have much bigger fish to fry than the Palestinian issue. So for that reason, the Arab establishment in the Middle East, what's left of it anyway, after the Iranian regime has tried to destroy it, destroyed the Arab state system, is much more with Israel than even Western Europe is, I would argue.
So Dan, you are doing something in your home community in Judea, in Efrat, which is a rather interesting community to me personally, because I happen to know your founder and rabbi. Why are you undertaking this podcast with your mayor? What is the background and what is the objective?
So in Efrat, our founding rabbi and our current chief rabbi since 1983 has been Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, originally of New York, and he's been the chief rabbi now for, oh goodness, 37 years. And our mayor is the very talented Oded Revivi, who's going into his 13th year as mayor. And Mayor Revivi was educated in London, and he's an Israeli, and then did his law degree here in Israel. But he has a very global view, and he has a nuanced view of diplomacy, international affairs. He was the former foreign envoy for the communities of Judea and Samaria. He actually came to a fundamental disagreement with some of the leaders in the settlement movement surrounding the U.S. plan. And he and I just did a podcast, which I sent to you folks just recently. And we're actually going to be doing a monthly podcast because I think that certainly in Israel, most of the communities in Judea and Samaria are far more mainstream in the Israeli domestic context than people realize abroad. And our view is that we want to mainstream the discussion from the point of view of sitting here in Efrat, which frankly, from an overall macro point of view in the Israeli context, is no different than the conversations that go on in most Israeli cities between politicians or thought leaders or business leaders regarding the Israeli national consensus, our security consensus, our economic consensus, our health consensus. So we want to normalize and mainstream the discussion, but do it from here in Judea and Samaria in a way that we think will resound in a very reasonable and accepting way by audiences in the United States and in North America.
I would be interested in possibly doing whatever we can, Jerry and I, on Beyond the Matrix, to help promote what you guys are doing and also to sort of get into the conversation where we can inform the listener. The problem is most of the media informs them the way they want them to think rather than to know what the facts are on the ground. And what you've said today has helped to really encapsulate that so very eloquently. What is your overall goal when you talk to the mayor in your podcast? What is your overall goal to reach?
Our overall goal is to embrace our friends and allies in the Christian community, in the Jewish community, even in the Muslim community, and people, as you point out so well, Rod, and you too, Jerry, that people don't have the facts. And we live in a world, especially in the West, in a world that used to be based on facts. I know when I went to Harvard College and I got a good education, it was called a liberal arts education. And that meant that we had wonderful professors like the conservative Harvey Mansfield, the great political philosopher on the conservative side. And then we had Alan Brinkley, great, who was a mentor of mine. He was a far more liberal professor, but they were teaching us how to think. And today, unfortunately, in too many circles in North America, universities are teaching their students what to think.
Yeah, it's become indoctrination, not education.
It has. And I'm a big fan, as you are, of fact-based and evidence-based presentations and consideration and debate. And I'm open to both sides of the debate, but they have to be based, as you say, on facts. And that's what we try to bring on Beyond the Matrix, which is why I appreciate this platform, because in Beyond the Matrix, you may have certain political and diplomatic positions, but you always lay out the questions fairly and consider both sides of the issue. And that's where what we're doing in a fraud between Mayor Revivi and myself is we want to bring fact-based analysis to the discussion. And when people, as I said earlier in this program, in this broadcast, when people think of settlers, they think of Jews with horns and these huge teeth coming out. Is this what the Palestinian Authority tries to do?
Wearing camel hair coats and the whole nine yards. Dan, we're going to have to go to a break, so I don't want anybody to go away. We have one last segment with you. Guys, I really appreciate you sticking around. Want to remind you, if you're watching it on YouTube, thank you so much. Subscribe right there on the subscribe button. And also leave us some comments. We really appreciate all of the great comments you guys make. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. We'll be right back after these very important messages.
Faith with Penina Taylor.
We live in the age of information, but not inspiration. If you're like me, you're looking to be inspired, to reach higher, to connect more, and to grow. Well, if you want to get warm, you need to stand close to the fire. And if you want to catch fire, you need to stand close enough to get hit by the sparks. Join me, Penina Taylor, as we walk with people who have embarked on a spiritual journey towards Torah. We'll uncover what started them on their journey and what truths they discovered along the way. So prepare to be inspired as we take a leap of faith every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We really appreciate you guys sticking around during the whole last segment as well. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix. We have Dan Diker with us and Jerry Gordon, our producer. And Jerry, I'm going to bump it over to you so that you can ask the next question that we talked about during the break.
Dan, why is this such a sea change in terms of the status of the Palestinians in this, quote, global commentary.
Well, Jared, really is the U.S. Vision for peace and its accompanying plan is a sea change in terms of the United States government putting the Palestinian leadership in the hot seat. They have, after so many years, nearly 30 years of saying no, no, and no, and continuing with incitement to violence and demanding that they have a state all the way up to the 1967 lines in English, when in Arabic they're talking about all of what they call mandatory Palestine from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. This American government has done its homework. They did it for 2 years on a listening tour with Special Envoy Greenblatt and Ambassador Friedman and Jared Kushner, who was overseeing it and reporting to the president. And what they realized is you can have a Palestinian state, but the Palestinians have got to step up to the plate and stop the deception. And the deception is that they made people believe that they would come to an end of conflict, when in fact they've said no to 9 offers in a row since 1936, and then clearly since 2000, they almost got 100% of what they wanted, and they still said no, and they didn't end the conflict, and they continued the incitement to violence, and they continued paying terrorists and their families, incentivizing them to kill Jews. And this government has said that all of that is a precondition, it has to stop. And that by recognizing Israeli rights, Jewish rights in the land of Israel, it has really put the at the same time offering the Palestinians a very robust state with a $50 billion development budget support plan attached to it, which the Palestinians, in my assessment, will never receive again outside this framework. It really puts them, places them in a moment of truth. And the question is, if they're really serious about having their own sovereign entity that really will look like something between Hong Kong, on the Mediterranean with Gaza, and as well as having an incredible Macau type of, upper middle class population sovereign in a sovereign entity in the West Bank. Now is their time to step up to the plate. This administration has realized that it is money time for the Palestinian leadership.
Don't you believe that the reason why the Palestinian leadership is not moving forward and will not move forward is it benefits them more to not do it, them personally, those who are in power, because that's their money tree at this point. Wouldn't you think so?
Well, that's what Palestinian commentators say. What you say, Rod, when on a day when they feel brave, many Palestinian reporters, as we speak today, have been arrested, interrogated, and worse because of their criticism of the Palestinian Authority, exactly on this issue of personal corrupt practices. If you look at the bank accounts of Mahmoud Abbas, his sons, Saab Arikat, now Mohammed Dahlan, these people are multimillionaires and multi-hundred millionaires. On the backs of Palestinian taxpayers as well as international funders in the West, in Europe, in the United States. So the Palestinian leadership has done a really great job of playing the American public, playing them as, for fools, frankly, to be very honest with you. While the Palestinian leadership plays weak, they engage in rhetorical violence, they finance real political violence, and they say no to every offer that they've been given. This administration has done its homework, and they say no more of this game playing. And that's why this is really, as I said before, a moment of truth for the Palestinians. If they don't come up to the plate and start playing ball as mature pre-state leaders, they're going to go down into the dustbin of history as having failed their people.
I want to shift a little bit. Jerry, you have a line of questionings about the government, the new Netanyahu government. Can you go ahead?
Well, but basically, Dan, how unified is this unity government at the moment?
Well, Jerry, after goodness gracious, almost a year and a half of without having a government, we had an interim government under Prime Minister Netanyahu since the government fell in November of 18. So we have this what's called national emergency government with rotating prime ministers, the first time in Israeli history that there are alternate prime ministers with the same status, essentially, between Netanyahu and Mr. Gantz, General Gantz, who broke away from his blue and white coalition to lead his faction into the government. Funny enough, it's a very broad government because you have two members of the Labor Party, two leading members of the Labor Party, and you have the blue and white, the resilience faction of the larger blue and white coalition. You have the Likud and the religious party. So it is a broad government. I think many people in Israel regret the fact that the Yamina party, which is the hawkish right of the Likud party, is in the opposition because they couldn't negotiate an agreement that they could live with. And then also Yvette Lieberman's party, Israel Our Home, is also in the opposition. And they were really the, if you want to call it Mr. No, they could have helped form a government the last two times that they refused because they had specific demands that were not met. But this is a broad government. It seems to be, it seems that there's a lot of interest in having this government serve out its time. It should last at least 3 years. That's the current rotation agreement, a year and a half for Mr. Netanyahu, a year and a half for General Gantz. I would submit to you, it may be increased to 2 years for Mr. Netanyahu and 2 years for Mr. Gantz as we move forward. It may well be that the Yamina party enters the coalition. This is right now a 73 mandate government, and it looks like there's a lot of interest after two failed elections and failures to form those coalitions, that people are very interested in making this work. There are 36 ministers and a number of deputy ministers. People want stability now in Israel, especially with the COVID-19 not resolved. And Israel has very serious security problems generated by the Islamic Republic of Iran on all borders. So people want stability. They want economic stability. They want security. They want health security. Those three issues and requirements are enough to make sure that this government lasts a good long time.
Dan, we had a recent visit by Secretary of State Pompeo. He had a couple of things on his agenda. What were they? And also, what is the story about pullback by Israel on China activities and investments there?
Well, Secretary Pompeo made a lightning 6 or 7 hour trip to Israel a couple of weeks ago. And there was a lot of speculation as to what the purpose of, what was it that was such a burning issue that required the Secretary of State to take a riskier trip in the context of COVID-19 and to zip into Israel for less than half a day. What was the burning issue that couldn't have been solved on Zoom or on the telephone? And there are some that said, oh, he was definitely going to talk about the peace plan. And then we said, no, he could do that on the phone. There's no reason for him to come to Israel. The real reason, I think, came to light with Israel's recent decision in order to award a contract for a major desalinization project in central Israel to an Israeli company, as opposed to what was formerly a leading Chinese company that was the lead candidate for such a contract. They did not. That reversal, I think, reflects the reason that Secretary Pompeo came to Israel. As we know, the Secretary, the President of the United States, Mr. Trump, have really targeted China on this COVID-19 for withholding vital information that could have saved many, many lives, and for other malign commercial and industrial types of, let's call it warfare, if you will. The Americans have been very concerned of Israel is now in contract with the Chinese to operate our port at Haifa starting in 2021, as well negotiating for the port in Ashdod, as well as the light rail contract in Jerusalem. So we've got a lot of contracts on the table with the Chinese government, with the Communist Party, that the United States government is very unhappy about at this juncture, especially after intelligence revelations regarding the Communist Party's malign apparently malign behavior regarding information and other issues regarding COVID-19. So we believe that that was the reason that Secretary Pompeo came to Israel. Their message, back off on China. These are not, the Communist Party are on our bad list.
We only have about, about 30 seconds or so. Is there anything else that you would like to add to that before we go? Or how can people get a hold of you, et cetera?
Well, everybody's welcome to join our constantly refreshed analyses on the JCPA website. That's jcpa.org. I invite everyone to follow me at DanDiker84, which is my Twitter handle, in which we discuss these things on a daily basis. And I would hope that everyone would retreat Beyond the Matrix. A great program. Great to be here. And look, we've got a lot of challenges in the Middle East. And we at the Jerusalem Center try to keep our fingers on the pulse and offer you the best analysis, fact-based, that your listeners and readers and audience can appreciate.
I really appreciate you saying that. And guys, don't forget, if you're on YouTube right now, make sure you subscribe. And for those who are listening on Beyond the Matrix, thank you very much. Make sure that if you want to email us, it's either Rod or Jerry at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Rod or Jerry. Not Rod or Jerry, two different emails. Send us an email and let us know what you think or ideas, etc. So until next time, we'll say shalom, shalom, and to you guys later.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom! Okay, wait a minute. Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.